mindful meditation, just for a few minutes. Since today we're discussing Ayurveda, TCM, and Tibetan medicine, I'm going to invite us to do a little chant. So notice what comes up with you already. And this actually is often a favorite of students when they can get over their fear. So we're going to chant Om. Now we're going to chant Om, we're not talking about any spiritual or religious significance. We're just doing the chant of Om, which is A-O-M. A-O-M. What I'm going to ask you to do is find your own rate of breathing, your own pitch, your own tone. So you're just going to find that. I'm going to ask everyone to make sound. Now, for those of you who are research inclined, it's been shown that chanting Om for 10 minutes a day reduces sinus infections by 60% by increasing the nitrous oxide concentration in the nasal passages, which makes it unfavorable or unfriendly for bacteria and viruses to exist. If you don't care about that, which I don't really at the moment, I'm going to ask you to just find your seat. You're going to take a breath in, and at your own rate. At your own rhythm, so you might breathe when other people are inhaling or exhaling. Om, it's three sounds. A-O-M. It goes not to match another person's pitch, but change it anytime you feel like you need to. I'm going to ring the bell once to begin, so start. Close your eyes. No one else is looking at you, so there's nothing to be embarrassed about. I'll be watching all of you. So now you just notice what this is like. Ah, oh, yeah. So imagine saying it already.
Last year we did that, and the students asked to keep doing it. And we actually did it in the chapel. I did this with my undergraduate class, and it's interesting to have them do it in the chapel. What came up for you when you did that? Other than nervousness and embarrassment? What comes up when you're given these instructions. I'm going to make a leap that many of you aren't even ready for, but this has to do with how you are going to be with your patients. They are not going to come in like a textbook, and you're going to have to get used to that. You're going to have to go, change course. Ooh. And so these exercises are one, also about noticing what you feel. When we talk about energy medicine, I've had people say, all of a sudden, they felt the whole room shift. Some of you might say, I don't feel anything. Some of you are focused on yourself. I'm not saying that that's bad either. Notice where you are right now. For some people, it's about what Hippocrates was talking about, ex spiritus, putting yourself out there. Oh my God, that's embarrassing. I'm going to be part of this collective view. So notice, I'm just asking you to notice what comes up when we do these exercises. And for those of you with sinus infections, you might want to do that anyway because it's a really interesting idea. Om, Amen, Shalom. We can go to all these different religious traditions and they all have some similar sounds.
I thought it was really amazing when you went from a whisper to quiet. And I thought I was actually making noise out loud, and it turned out it was just an airplane going overhead, but it really kind of had the same kind of energy going on. Wow, I thought I was actually making noise.
The plane was owning with you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it happened or not, but it was in the after hours listening that there's a kirtan of the special kirtan event. Does anyone know more about that? But if you like chanting and it's like along the lines of Ayurvedic home kind of things, it's a really fun experience. So I don't know, check your after hours. There was like a special.
I don't think I saw that yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I saw that.
Yep, there's so much going on
here.
So I'm going to go on this. So there's a lot here on this today. And again, my goal is that you don't remember this. First of all, you used to have a class on Ayurvedic fundamentals. You don't have it anymore. Sorry about that. There is a class on fundamentals of TCM, and there's nothing on Tibetan medicine. My goal really is not that you remember everything, but we're looking at the development of naturopathic medicine, we're looking at the history of medicine and how things start to interweave and connect and cross-pollinate. So we're just going to be introduced to some of these concepts of Ayurveda, TCM, and Tibetan medicine. That's all. I'm not asking you to remember all of this. However, and at the end of the class today, your homework for Wednesday is to talk, we're talking about constitutional medicine, constitution. So hopefully you'll pick up what that means today. The scientists know that in the history of ideas, magic always precedes science, that the intuition of phenomena anticipates their objective knowledge. Well, isn't that what we've seen already? We see magic as the idea of what's happening, and then other things happen. Clinic Pearl today, since we just did Oming, is the neti pot. How many of you have done a neti pot and you have not drowned? See? Okay. How many people have never heard of the neti pot? Okay, the neti pot. It looks like a little teacup. Don't buy the porcelain ones. If you're like me, I have broken like five. there is now medical grade plastic, which I like because I drop mine all the time. I don't know why. Neti pot. Even little kids can do the neti pot. What is it? The neti pot, you fill it with warm water, and there's so many different ways of doing that, depending on what system of medicine you're using. Mostly it's sea salt or kosher salt. About a quarter teaspoon to a cup of water. Too much salt can burn. Too little salt burns too. If it's not the right osmolarity, if it's not the right concentration, if it's too little, it will burn. I also put a quarter teaspoon of baking soda in mine because baking soda lines the mucous membranes and prevents adherence of many microorganisms. It is said in the Ayurvedic tradition that he who drinks water through the nose will have profound eyesight, not have the graying of hair, you know, all these wonderful things. It cleans out the sinuses. To do it twice a day. For people who are having acute respiratory or sinus infections, I often have them put in Hydrastis powder. But be sure you're not wearing white. My practice is I do this twice a day. I've had patients who've done this and then they've gotten haven't gotten a sinus infection in years. Every day. Every day.
Forever?
Forever. How many pollutants are going through? This is a kriya. This is just a cleansing technique from the Ayurvedic tradition.
Did you say a quarter teaspoon?
Quarter teaspoon of salt and a quarter teaspoon of baking soda per cup of water. I always warm up some water and get the right temperature. Because I've actually put too hot water in my nose. The practice is you do the neti pot, you do some uttasana, you do some standing forward bends. I remember when I was really congested, I had a cold this weekend. It's getting better. But I remember I used to go, Kathy Britton. You know Dr. Kathy Britton? She's in a yoga instructor as well. For a year, we would go to a different yoga studio on Saturday and then have breakfast and talk about the yoga studio. And I remember I had congestion. I did my neti pot. And we went to this yoga class in the middle. We were doing a forward bend and a twist. And all of a sudden, I twisted. And it was an hour after I did the neti pot. All this water came through my nose. if you go far back, it will go down your throat. Nobody has died doing a neti pot. People are afraid of them. It's okay. And as I said, little kids can enjoy it too. That's the clinic pearl.
I just want to put in a plug for it because I know a lot of us have been getting sick, and my girlfriend too has been really sick, and I was sick for like a day, and I did the neti pot, and my girlfriend's still sick, and I was just wondering like what I did.
Can we have a hallelujah?
It's the only thing.
Let's hear that.
How do you use it?
How do you use it? So you fill up the warm water, the salt in the pot. And you tilt your head. If you tilt too far back, it goes down your throat. You gag. And you just have the right balance, and it just comes out the other side. And when you're really congested, sometimes the stream is like... and then you do the other side, and it goes right out.
Are you just letting the water flow, or are you supposed to be like...
No. You're just letting the throat flow. Don't lean too far back. It's really easy to get the hang of it. Then, after that, what I do when I ran out past 2 weeks, which is why I think I got a cold, is cayenne pepper. I am pepper spray in the sinuses. I tell you, clear up everything. If you have migraines, it could be because of what's going on in the nose. That's another clinic pearl. I've got so much to do. We're going to move on. Ayurveda. So, Dr. Sabota, very important, who might teach here sometimes, on Ayurveda. No doctor since the beginning of time has ever cured a patient. Sounds like Hippocrates. No doctor ever will, for nature alone can cure. Physicians are not meant to work wonders or perform miracles. How many of you want to? A true physician is a teacher who helps his or her patient work through their problems on all levels. Doctors are meant to use their knowledge of the patient's past illnesses and present condition to intuit future possibilities for health and establish a healing strategy for the individual. True physicians leave the miracles to nature, offering themselves as a channel through which nature can work her magic. So, Ayurveda. What does Ayurveda mean? Ayurveda, the science of life or longevity. It's considered 5,000 years old. The rishis, the seekers. Ayurveda, the knowledge of Ayurveda came from the book of the Vedics, and the rishis were the seers. It is said that this... I can't pronounce all of these words correctly. Again, I apologize, so if anyone can help me. It is said that this knowledge... just was divine, just like they talk about in Egypt. Interesting, we have the Vedic system, it's the basis for Hinduism. About 1700 to 400 BCE, there were four Vedas. The four Vedas are the different books of the Hindu tradition. And of course, the two that we're focusing on are the Rig Veda and the Atharva Veda. The other two are for incantations and prayers from the priests. So specific priests are to read these. So what happened with the Ayurvedic tradition and the Vedas? It was written down. They were not written down. 10,572 hymns were memorized and passed down through oral tradition. 5,977 hymns discussing, this is why this one's important, physiology, surgery. The whole system of Ayurveda was in here. Years and years ago. And it was just, where did they get it? Who knows? The gods. Okay, that's what they say. But we have anatomy, we have the idea of constitutionality, herbology, all in here. And that's what one of them looked like. Exactly. Okay. So we have, when we look at Ayurveda, we wind up seeing two different schools of physicians. And again, we were talking about how Pythagoras had a school of physicians. Well, we see that this happened in Ayurveda too, in India. So in the West, we have Pythagoras, but in India, we have this as well. Charaka, or the Charaka Samhita, this just means compilation. And so it's a compilation of texts. It's one of the first texts. The word charak or charaka originally meant wandering scholar or wandering physician. And in this first work, first written work of medicine that we see, it had detailed accounts of anatomy, physiology, pathogenesis, symptoms of, and signs of disease, methods of diagnosis, treatment, prescription, prevention, and longevity. But the important part, as we're talking about, is the cosmology of medicine and what their perspective is. There was the first cause of illness. What's the first cause of illness? Loss of faith in the divine. Just like Hippocrates said, we can be out of balance with nature. Ayurveda means the science of life. And so they say that external influences, and this is what Hippocrates said, around a little bit later than this. So they were saying that the time of day, seasons, diets, lifestyle, all affect you based on your constitution. Now, remember, we have the four humors from Hippocrates. And you need to know your humor. And then Galen came along way after this and said, what are the humors of the different herbs? What's the humors of different food? They talked about this already. They didn't use the four humor system. But they're talking about balance. So all of these things can influence your health. They also had a huge thing about diet and reversing age. Because what was the main cause of old age? Not living in balance. Think about... I hope I'll get to that point right now. I'll get to that point. They also outlined 700 vessels, or what we think of as blood vessels, but what TCM says may have been the original meridians. So some historians think that TCM and the idea of the meridians came from the Ayurvedic tradition. They also discussed 500 different herbs. This was not happening in the time of Hippocrates, Pythagoras, and Galen yet. Well, not Galen, but Hippocrates and Pythagoras. They did not talk about that many herbs. Again, this school of thought, the first school of thought said that life is divine and the goal of life is to realize the divine. This is a different thing from the West. And if we get into Western psychology, which we will down the road, it's a little bit different. What this school is talking about is transcendence. It's about a horizontal, vertical. I don't know my left and right, sometimes side. I do know my liver's over here. But vertical transmission. We're trying to access God. We're trying to access the divine. We're trying to realize that our inner nature is divine. And so this is the basis for all that we do. Since there is this interaction with the divine, we are all interdependent and interconnected. So my action with you is going to impact your action with another person. My impact on the soil impacts everyone else. So it's a different way of looking. The practitioner's responsibility is to inspire and help to awaken the patient to their own inner divine nature. This is similar to Hippocrates. Did he read any of the Ayurvedic texts? To teach each person the divinity within in order to feel connected to life. The deepest pathology is mental agitation, looking for a deeper spiritual connection. We're going to talk about this next quarter when we talk about spirituality and naturopathic medicine. What does it mean? Some people think it means God, and so they don't want to talk about it. And as I'm going to point out, that it can mean, for many people, meaning and purpose. What gives you meaning and purpose? What wakes you up in the morning? What gets you out of bed? Do you have a connection with that? And as you go through the 4 years, do you still have a connection with that? Happiness and unhappiness are the result that result in health and disease. If you're happy or unhappy, that affects your health. So the first treatment is to align with your true divinity. The second treatment, then, is herbs, diet, and medication. This is important. Hippocrates did not necessarily say to connect with the divine. We do remember that we are in balance with physis. Physis is the organism's interrelationship with the environment around them. But he did talk about herbs, diet, and meditation. So from this text, we see disease-causing fear in all living things have appeared, O Lord of God. Tell me the proper measures for their amelioration. Then Lord Indra, having absorbed the wide intelligence of the great sage, delivered him the words, delivered him Parivedic in a few words. Actually, it's 10,000 hymns, so it's more than that. Lord Indra was the god of war and wisdom, but also the god of medicine. So that was the first school. So we talked about, what was the date before? 1500 BCE? Now, you know, quite some time later. We had the Shruta Samhita from Dhanvantari. Dhanvantari is a god of medicine, but there also was a person, Dhanvantari, and he was considered to be the father of surgery in the Ayurvedic tradition. And there is still a society of his in the United States. In this text, it outlined 8 classifications for surgery, 8 different types of surgery, 120 surgical instruments in 6 BCE. I wouldn't want to use those instruments then. 300 procedures, 760 herbs. And it classified diseases this way, plastic surgery. Yes, he's also considered the father of plastic surgery. What was the plastic surgery in that time, mainly?
Cleft palate.
Clefting conditions. Great detail on anatomy and bones, nerves, the marma points, which are similar to acupuncture points. The interesting thing is we have these 3 vital marma points. We have the one between the third eye, or the eyebrow, the heart, and in the perineum. And they're a little bit different than what we see in other systems. But that's not what I wanted to get to. In the 7th century, so 1300 years later, we have another school of medicine that talks about breaking up medicine into 8 branches of medicine. So this is around 600, 700, CE, and so we see the same thing happening in Galen medicine as well. This is happening in India. They talk about internal medicine, ear, nose, and throat, toxicology, pediatric surgery, psychiatry, aphrodisiacs, because that was a big part of things. You know, having your internal juices flowing was important, and rejuvenation. This school of medicine had exams in all 8 areas to be granted a license back in 7th century CE, there was a license for physicians. They didn't have that in any other system yet, and it was granted by the king. I'm just briefly going through this history until we get some more points. The original way of learning was from the guru. It wasn't an apprenticeship model about following them, but the guru, it was direct one-on-one transmission from the person from whom you're learning. That was the original system. I'm going to skip some of this. Nalanda was a great place in 5th century BCE where the Buddha was supposedly having visited many times. It became a center or seat of medical learning at that time. But here's what's interesting. So then there was contact between India and Greece in the 4th century BCE. That's prior to some of these other schools starting. So we have this contact between India and Greece, so was information cross-pollinated? Was it shared? Possibly. The Ayurvedic texts, the first two, were translated into Greek. Everything was translated into Greek. But how much did that influence Greek? It was translated into Persian.
Arabic in the 800s. The Muslim invasion in the 10th and 11th century CE tried to replace Ayurvedic medicine with Unani medicine, but it didn't happen. And then we find the remains of a lot of this in the Tibetan translation. Only thing I want to say about this slide is that in 1835, British rule in India wanted to get rid of Ayurvedic medicine, of course. Currently, today, there are six systems of medicine recognized in India. Ayurveda, Siddha, Unani, Homeopathy, Yoga, Naturopathy, which is not like our naturopathy. It's a little bit different. And allopathic medicine. There are six branches that are acceptable in the Indian system of medicine. And homeopathy and Ayurveda is one of them. You can go to hospitals specifically for that. I'm going to skip this. So, this is the part I wanted to get to. Ayurveda theory. Everything comes from the unmanifest, the undifferentiated, what we will talk about in TCM, the Tao. It gives rise to these three gunas, or principles, that uphold all of life. Sattva, which is creation, Rajas, maintenance, and Tamas, disillusion. So from all this undifferentiated mass, we are all the same. It's saying the same thing. It's like the Tao. We are all undifferentiated. It gives creation to three gunas, or principles. The principles. Creation, which is building up of things. Destruction, dissolution, tamas. And then maintenance, rajas. These three give rise to five essential elements. Water, earth, fire, air, and ether. And from ether, we get space and matter. Why is this important? Because it creates the doshas, which we'll talk about in a second. These elements, when they are out of balance, when these elements are out of balance, that's what the cause of disease is. Therefore, each person has to have an individualized approach to health, kind of like what we're talking about with naturopathic medicine. All aspects have to be examined. You have to understand everything about the person's life. Nothing is inconsequential. How you do what you do is really important, not just what you do. What is the motivation for what you do? That's important. And the goal is to create balance. It's not the elimination of disease. That's the other thing I want you to keep in mind. The goal is not to say, okay, you don't have that, you know, let's get rid of irritable bowel syndrome, or let's get rid of eczema. Let's put you back in balance. What are you doing to be in balance? Do you feel like your life's in balance right now? I'm waiting for somebody to go, uh-huh, as you're all sitting here. So ether is the subtlest form of matter. It mixes with eternity. Air moves and creates friction. So air, this is the evolution of these. There's ether. And it mixes with eternity, which then creates air, which is the movement. And because of friction, it creates fire. Fire produces moisture. When things are burning, it creates moisture, which creates water, which then leads to earth because it becomes denser, and then there's earth. Again, we're treating the cause, not the symptom. So the doshas. These mix together. These elements mix together. How many of you know your dosha? We all have a dosha. I should give you should put the Ayurvedic questionnaire online. I'll do that. If I remember, I will. The doshas. We have vata, pitta, kapha. You've heard of these? Vata, pitta, kapha. Vayu, vata, is to spread. It's a mixture of air and ether. And you can tell when someone is a vata of nature because they move quickly. Their mental facilities are very quick. They love to communicate. It's all about communication and quickness and ideas and thoughts. Many times when it's out of balance, there's nervous system problems, anxiety, frustration, insomnia. There's always physical activity and thinking. The qualities, they're cold, it's dry, light, quick, rough, unstable. In the Ayurvedic tradition, air and ether rule the head. Then you have fire, which rules digestion. This is where you get... So this is a person who's really the inquisitive, thoughtful person, but this is often the type A person. Fire, fiery. They're intense. It's about digestion and absorption of those ideas, assimilation and metabolism and breaking things down. A person who is in a pitta state is often hot, moist. They can be sour, sharp, penetrating. I have a whole list in a minute. And that's just the fire element alone. Then we have kapha, which is earth and water. It's this density. A kapha is this tortoise. They take a long time to get started, but once they go, they have determination and keep going. Whereas the vata said, oh, but look over here. Oh, but look over there. Oh, yeah, hey, but over here. And the pitta says, get out of my way. So vatas are cold, but kaphas can be cold as well. But they're slow, they're wet, they're heavy. And here are, on the slide, you can look at these. There's all these qualities. You can just look up these charts to see where you fall. Vata, pitta, kapha. So, the therapeutic order. This is important because we're going to talk about the naturopathic therapeutic order in next quarter. The first goal is to determine your constitution. How do you respond to things? How do you interact with your environment? That's the first goal, to find out your dosha. Then you try to find out what element is out of balance. So somebody could come in with insomnia. Kaphas rarely have insomnia. Kaphas are the ones who rarely wake up to an alarm, or seven. Vatas hear the alarm in the neighbor's house. And pittas get up, hear the alarm, and they're going. They don't even have to wake up with an alarm. Vatas can have, and pittas can have insomnia. But what's the vata? The vata insomnia is they're just thinking about all these things. Not necessarily anxiety. They're thinking about all these things in the middle of the night. They wake up and they start thinking. Pittas are like, they get up and they do something. So the quality of these symptoms determine the constitution, the element that's out of balance. And then what we do is recommend balancing the element that causes the illness without causing an imbalance. You can overbalance. Ayurveda, their books, before we see in the West, had face diagnosis. Before you see it in TCM, they had face diagnosis. They look at the face. Yes?
I
see
it
could
be a combination of things, or is everybody
yes.
like one
final? No. You can be a single element, you can be two, and you can be tridosha. And it's very problematic to be tridosha, because it's really hard to have equal balance of vata, pitta, kapha, because when something gets disturbed, you don't know what to do.
Right.
As I'm looking at the time and I'm speeding up, you can tell what is my constitution. What?
Pizza?
No, pizza.
Vata.
Vata. Vata, vata, vata. Which is also a problem, too. You can be tridosha, single dosha. You can look at the face. And there's text to say they all look different. You can look at the eyes. The shape of the eyes determine the constitution. You can look at the tongue, fingers, the ridges of the nail beds, the pulse. Before you see the TCM Sun Guan Qi, you see a pulse diagnosis. Fever diagnosis. How do you get a fever? If you get a fever instantly and it's really hot and it's high, pitta. Do you get a really high fever and it's intense? Or are you a slow person? Now, this fits with homeopathy, too. It's amazing how these systems overlap. But each type of fever will tell you. If you never really mount a fever, it's kapha. Your voice diagnosis. Skin, urine. Again, we always have urine. Isn't that great? And stool diagnosis. And so, Ayurveda, the thing I wanted you to remember is there's three gunas. It gives rise to five elements. There's three constitutions. That's all. There's three doshas. But you can get to all these doshas by this. Ecto, meso, and endomorph fit with vata, pitta, kapha. Mesomorph is pitta. Endomorph, kapha. Ectomorph, vata. It's not always a hard and fast rule. So this is what you're going to be doing next, this coming Wednesday. You're going to be looking at these different constitutions. How do you make assessments of people? Do you put them into different camps? That's all I wanted you to know about Ayurvedic medicine. It's a whole, 3-year study at some other school or a lifetime study. Let's talk about Chinese medicine. That's all. 3-year program here. We're going to talk about it in one day. Several different systems. Traditional Chinese medicine, or 8 principles, as they call it, or the 5 elements. This is the older system. This is more of the spiritual system, which Mao liked to wipe out during communism. Because, we can't talk about spirit. The history of this is all blended with myth and ritual. And I'm not going to go into that, actually. Except for Sheng Nong, who was the founder of herbal medicine in the TCM approach. And it was said that in one day he tasted 70 different toxic herbs to find out their properties. So that he could... it's a great way to know things. You take, okay, that's for this. He didn't die. but he knew how by knowing what the experience was for him. We'll see this with Hahnemann and homeopathy as well. I'm going to skip all this. The ancient sage did not treat those who were already ill. They instructed those who were not yet ill. The superior physician helps the early budding of disease. The inferior physician begins to help when the disease was already developed. This is an important notion. I wish we would bring this back. In the old TCM model, or Chinese medicine model, you would go to your physician when you were well. He would say, okay, it's cold now, this is your constitution right now, you should do this. If you did what he recommended and fell ill, you stopped paying him. Because you did what he suggested. If, however, you didn't do what he suggested and you fell ill, you kept paying him. What an interesting preventative medicine model. Wouldn't that be interesting? If that's how it worked, people might listen to their physician. All right. The idea of here is about the Tao. Again, 6th or 4th century, depending on who you look at, BCE. So, like Ayurveda, we have the Tao. The Tao is the undifferentiated manifest things. Out of the one comes the 10,000 things. We are all different. We are all the same. The Tao, unbroken wholeness. So the universe is continually changing and composed of principles. The great void, which is where we have the three gunas in Ayurveda, they develop the yin and the yang, the exterior, the interior, the hot, the cold. And it's this interdependence between the two. You don't have just one. If you have a lot of yin, you don't have a lot of yang. The minute yang is gone, you're dead. So it's about, again, it's balance, balancing yin and yang. Are you doing too much yang activity or not enough yin activity? So it's about balancing this. The human being is simply a reflection of all else that's going on. So that means if there's an imbalance out in your environment, how is that impacting you? And what's your relationship to the environment? The other main influence in Chinese medical cosmology is Confucianism, which really talked about the role of the person in society. Family first, community, then the individual. What this meant is the physician looked at your role in your family. In certain historical texts, when you fell ill, the family came in. The community came in and said, this is what's happening. Okay, how is this playing out for the whole group? Instead of just saying, what's happening to me? The key components, benevolence, cultivation of benevolence, and your social standing, and ritual propriety, knowing your place and acting accordingly. It's not about suppressing yourself, but knowing that I'm here in this group, how does my actions impact everybody else? In our culture, that might seem like a wrong thing to do now. So we have the yin, we have the yang, just like we have the gunas, like we have the doshas, we have the different aspects. The yin is the shady side of the mountain, as I say, it's primordial water. Yang is primordial fire, it's the sunny side. Qualities are cold, responsiveness, passivity, darkness, downwardness, inwardness. Decrease, and it's completely the opposite with the yang. So we begin to look at symptoms based on yin and yang. So I'm trying to put it in a framework that in Ayurveda, TCM, and as we get into Tibetan medicine as well, we're looking at how are these things all balanced. Okay, that. The five-element model is a little bit different. And you know, I'm saying next quarter you're going to have a whole class on this, and it's just one. So I'm not doing it justice. I'm trying to get you to think about this in a different way, or medicine in a different way. In five-element model, we have the five elements, fire, earth, metal, water, and air. They're different than Ayurveda. As you can see, there's five elements in Ayurveda. Different element. We have fire, we have earth, we have water. We don't have wood or metal. We have air and ether. Very similar. So to help you right now start thinking in this kind of archetype, we have... Each element has a different type of, it's a different energy. It's wuxing, which means five elements or five directions or five movements. And it's movement of energy, so that you cannot be complete without all of them. All of them make up the whole. Metal is declining energy. It's linked to autumn. It's linked to this time of year. It's linked to the lungs and large intestine. Each element is linked to a different body part, which is different than in Ayurveda. So if you look at how these things move, Ayurveda moved to China and they added to it. The emotion of metal is often called grief. If grief is suppressed, it becomes depression. Questions. I have questions on here, and I'll let you look at these later. But metal kinds of questions, if you can respond to these, you might know what the element metal is. How do you regret? What do you regret? Whom do you respect? How do you respond to criticism? How judgmental are you? What inspires you? How is your breathing? What is the most precious in your life? How do you interact with authority figures? Are you an authority on someone? How are your bowels?
I ask that all the time.
These are metal questions. Water is linked to stillness. It's the bottom. It's the apex. It's pregnant with possibility. Water time of year is winter. Water time of year is also linked to kidneys and bladder, and the emotion is fear. None of these emotions are pathological. You need all of these, is what they're also saying. It's also about will, endurance, ambition. And it's about quiet, reflection. How much water have you used today? How do you feel in or near water? What motivates you? That's about will. What inspires awe? Not just inspiration, which is mental, but awe. What makes you anxious or nervous? What are you afraid of? How are you affected by winter? I'm not a water. How easy or difficult is it for you to be still? Wood is about springtime. I like to think about wood as that, you know, in the city sidewalk, it doesn't matter, that blade of grass pushes through. That's wood energy. Wood energy is forceful energy. It's liver, it's gallbladder. And it's also, some people say about aggression, but it's also about third chakra, if we're going to connect it to Ayurveda, standing up for yourself. So wood energy is outward, spring, green. Anger can be a problem. You know how anger comes out at you? So if you talk to people like that all the time and they're shouting, that's it. And so quality of voice is also part of how you diagnose wood. How do you feel in spring? What are your hope? What are you hopeful about? What has made you lose hope? How do you give and receive directions? Like my brother. We'll be lost for hours. We'll never ask for directions because he knows where he's going even when he's lost. What new ideas have you come up with lately? How often do you drink alcohol? It's connected with wood. Fire is sunshine. It's summer. It's heart. Heart. Ability to resonate out. Love. Fire. This is my thing. Now fire is about joy, which can come out of, can roll out of, can get out of control too, and that can become mania. You know, can you always be happy? When somebody says, oh, that you see a sad film, you go, oh, that was good. You know, that can be a problem too. What are you passionate about? What brings you joy? How do you feel in hot weather, hot foods? What do you feel burned out? Do you burn out your passion? Your circulation, your sex life, how do you feel out of control and the desire to control others? And then we get to Earth. And Earth is Indian summer, which we kind of had here. I don't know. We don't have five seasons here. We have like two. The sun goes away from now until... that's me. Earth is about nurturing. It's about nourishing. It's about mother energy. It's in the center of the wheel. It's about gratitude and content and sympathy. How do you take care of yourself? Are you a caretaker? Do you care for others? How much do you worry? What gives you security, stability? How's your appetite? How do you nourish yourself? Those questions are about nourishing yourself. Do you think of nourishing yourself? Is food just fuel to keep going? Like a fire might say. Or does it give you joy? Or is it to nourish yourself?
Are these, if you're able to answer those questions, does that mean that you're more like that?
Yes, if you notice there's if you notice there's a set of questions, it could be that that's the state that's unbalanced, or that's the state is it your natural tendency.
So it's not necessarily the answers to those questions.
How you answer those questions, yeah. You can answer all of those questions, but if you go, oh, worry. Oh, I talk about fear. No, I worry. It's different. About stability. Am I going to have security? I worry people like me. That's not bad. It's a different way of relating. Yes?
Could you also be using multiple?
Yes. Topics? Yes. So last thing I want to talk about these two slides. Yes, you can. They do same thing. Observation, appearance, smell, color. So they're a little bit different. That's part of Ayurvedic. Smell. They have the smell of each element. Is it smell burnt? Does the person smell burnt? You can tell the different smells of people. Is it rancid? Is it acidic? Is it earthy? The coloring. Do people look green? Do they look red? You notice when you look at people, they might have a green hue or a yellow hue to it, or a white hue or a red. regardless of ethnicity. You can see this. Dryness and dampness. How dry are they? How damp are they? Your hands always cold, but dry. Are they always cold and damp? Are they always hot and dry? Heat and cold. The interview. They do, in TCM, they talked about the extensive interview, just like Galen talked about. And they listen, but they're not listening to the words, but how do you sound? The fire sound is laughing. The earth sound could be groaning. There can be singing. There can be shouting. How does a person speak? And palpation of the pulses. Their therapeutic order is, again, balanced living with the Tao. So the TCM doctor would say, this is this, your earth gets out of balance. So, or the yin and yang get out of balance. So, it's more yin right now. This is not a yang time of year. It's cold and damp. They would tell you, for some of you, Ayurvedic doctors will tell you, if you're a vata, your main constitution is vata, get out of Seattle. It's not a good place for you. If you're a pitta, hey, you can stay here all the time. TCM would do the same thing. And then, after they live in accordance with the Tao, diet and nutrition, looks like Ayurveda. Then they did herbal medicine, acupuncture. Then you treat with bowels, breath, viscera, and then surgery. This kind of looks like our naturopathic therapeutic order, which we're going to get to. What I want to point out is, what we've done in the West is we've taken TCM and skipped this and put this first, and people go see an acupuncturist. This is first, not first do no harm. They didn't mention it this way, but the principle was first do no harm. Acupuncture, especially around 6000 BCE, I wouldn't necessarily want those needles. Yeah, you could do acupuncture. One of my teachers used to say, first you do your needles, then you do your finger needles, then you do your eye needles, then you use your chi needle. You don't need a needle, which is a lot of other complex systems in TCM. You could just do tweet up. But I want to point out that herbal medicine is also high force. It's not necessarily easy. Herbs can be toxic. The point I wanted to get to, I am not going to get to TCM Tibetan medicine today, so please look at the slides. It's just looking at another cosmology that came from China, from Ayurveda, from Unani, it all mixed, and they have seven things, and these principles, and that principle. But the main point of Tibetan medicine, it's also about the mind. It adds the Buddhist component of the mind, aversion, desire, attachment, cause, problem. Why? Because that is what motivates you to live out of balance with nature. But the last part I want to mention is this. If you look at the evolution of herbal medicine, and next week, we're going to get to monastic medicine and herbal medicine. Look at the evolution of herbal medicine. You're not getting into this in depth. The first thing that medicine was for, the herbal medicine was to treat some infection, like parasites, and certain infections, but it really wasn't that much. A lot of the herbs, especially in the Ayurvedic tradition, way before we see it in Egypt, or not Egypt, but in Greek, was about bringing things into balance. It was not to treat a symptom. It wasn't trying to kill something. It was about herbs to bring into balance. With TCM, what we see in herbology is it began to be more cut and dry, black and white. Let's treat, put you in balance, but now let's start to treat the pathology. Here's this external pathogen, wind invasion. So it's about treating the pathogen. And what we're going to get to in Western herbal medicine is we see the advent of herbs, more toxicity happens at each level, to deal with diseases of overindulgence. Diabetes, obesity. We did not see these things so much until we had more of a place of comfort and could overindulge, which is massively out of balance according to TCM, Tibetan, and Ayurvedic perspective. So herbal medicine changes in its potency as we go through the ages. But all I wanted you to remember about this is knowing that there's different aspects of constitution medicine, and that our goal is to be in balance. My question to you to focus on is, how balanced are you? There's a difference between passive rest and active rest. Passive rest is where you simply collapse at the end of the day, turn on the TV, or maybe listen to some music, but just collapse. That's not rest. That's collapse. Active rest is whatever you do to nurture yourself and nourish yourself. As one of my colleagues said yesterday, I spoke at the Bioengineers Conference downtown. One of my colleagues with whom I did the presentation said, you know what? She's a midwife. Children, we know how to help them. We put them in the bath. We sing them a song. We read them a story. We hug them. We feed them nourishing food. Are you doing that for yourself? Or do you say, I'm done studying now. I'm going to watch this episode of this. Or maybe not even that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to take a bath. And while I'm in my bath, I'm going to read my notes for anatomy. And then I'm going to go to sleep. That's collapse. Where are you doing active rest? The theme of this is to be in balance. There's questions. Dr. Liang, Thomas's section is going to be split. You're going to half of you are going to go to my section, half of you are going to go to Dr. Liang's section because she can't be here tomorrow. You should get an email by tomorrow about that. And our focus on lab is constitutional medicine. The first hour, you're going to play with assessing people's constitution, creating your own constitution. Like, I'm going to put people in height categories, or I'm going to put, that's how we make assessment. There's questions on the syllabus, and here, you're going to be turning those in at the end of class. Okay. I'm going to stop talking for 5 minutes. How are you guys doing? Think about balance. Your life in balance. We're out of balance.
We'll do this question in the lab.
You're going to discuss those questions in lab, but you're turning them in at the end of lab. So you can turn them in, you know, work on them right now, type them up. Everybody sign in.
Is there such a thing as an exam? What?
No, that's not good. Oh, no. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.